Good morning. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. The last time we spoke with Sarah Goldrick Robb on this show, we introduced her as a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
This time around, she has a few different titles. The outspoken educator announced in March that she would leave the flagship UW school for a position at Temple University in Philadelphia. Her decision came after the UW Board of Regents approved a new tenure policy, a large-scale change that Goldrick Robb called poisonous to the system.
And just last month, Goldrick Robb added another line to her business card. Politico magazine named her one of the top 50 thinkers, doers, and visionaries transforming American politics in 2016. Her contribution sparking a national conversation about college affordability.
That's the subject of the professor's latest book, Paying the Price. Now halfway through her first semester at Temple, Goldrick Robb returned to Milwaukee late last month to promote the book. She also took some time to speak with Lake Effect's Rachel Morello about her newest venture, as well as her transition from Wisconsin to Pennsylvania.
It's been a good move. I think that I wasn't sure. I knew that I needed to go, but I wasn't entirely positive that going would lead me to a place where I would feel like I could be as effective, because I have developed such wonderful relationships in Wisconsin, and it takes so long to do that I was worried I would kind of like lose time through the transition. And the really good news is that's not true. It has been really easy to build the relationships that I need. Temple is like incredibly supportive in ways that I didn't even know were so important before until they did those things. And the other thing is the issues that are so central to my work, that are central here in Milwaukee, are also central in Philadelphia. And so that both means that I keep getting the opportunity to hear from the same sorts of stories from the same sorts of students in general, but it also means that I get the sense that this is not just a Wisconsin issue. And I get to kind of live that up front. So I've been pretty darn happy, to be honest with you. Yeah.
I feel like since the last time you and I talked, which was when you announced you were leaving, this issue of tenure and academic freedom hasn't gone away per se, but it's definitely not as fiery or loud, I think, a debate every day as it was when that decision came down. Do you think people have continued to talk about it? Have you continued to talk to colleagues in Wisconsin about it? Give me a sense of where you think it is now and where it's headed.
I have noticed what you've noticed. I think the tone changed. I'm not going to say that I was the only agitator here, but that is one thing about a movement. You have to have folks who are willing to keep pushing it. And it was one of my fears about leaving was, I mean, if I had not actually feared for my family, then I never would have gone. And I would love to be standing shoulder to shoulder with my colleagues at Wisconsin and still continuing that fight. And I can also tell you, we've got fights still in Pennsylvania that need to be had. The experience of being in a union and having tenure have affirmed for me that you need both. So I actually am more concerned than ever that, given what I do absolutely still continue to believe is fake tenure in the University of Wisconsin system, coupled with the lack of unionization at the University of Wisconsin campuses, people are very, very vulnerable. And I'm worried that if they're not sufficiently attentive to that, then it's going to catch them by surprise when it comes. And it will come, unfortunately.
What other changes or differences have you noticed? I know it's only been a short time that you've been in Philadelphia, but what feels different to you about the university system there or the higher education system there?
Well, they have different words for what's public and what's private. It's very interesting. So, you know, here we talk about, well, how come we have two types of two-year colleges, right? And we have the technical colleges and the UW colleges. And actually, I could easily explain why we do. And it is rational, but people who don't understand it, you know, miss it. In Pennsylvania, we have state institutions and state-related institutions. And it has to do with their origins. So I'm at a, quote, state-related institution, which, you know, means that Temple was originally private. Now, some people have said to me, well, then you're not really at a public institution. So I thought about that a lot, and I don't agree, because the fraction of the money that the institution gets from the state is remarkably similar to the fraction of money that UW-Madison gets. And Temple works extremely hard to ensure that the public can get into the school. So, for example, we don't require standardized test scores at Temple University, something that I worked really hard to try to convince UW-Madison to do. And partly as a result, there is an incredible array of people from all walks of life walking around Temple's campus. And by the way, they are capable of doing college-level work, and they are graduating. So, you know, it feels very public to me, frankly. We have more students of color by droves than I ever had the opportunity to be with at Madison. And we also have far more socioeconomic diversity. The percent of students that are Pell Grant recipients is much, much, much higher. And that's not just a function of being Philadelphia, for Pete's sake. It is also a function of choices. And so those distinctions and trying to understand, therefore, how the state institutions relate to the state-related institutions in Pennsylvania, those are things I'm looking at. It might interest your listeners to know, they know I did a fair bit of work here at the state level, and under Governor Doyle did some work with the governor's office, didn't do so much under the current governor. It took about a month before I was invited to a meeting with the governor in Pennsylvania. It was incredibly quick. I was pretty stunned. And I just took the train out to Harrisburg. That is annoying, by the way. I loved living down the street from the, you know, from the action in Madison. And now it takes over 2 hours to get there on the train and I need to be there, right? But I was invited to a small group conversation on college affordability. And it was mainly the presidents of various institutions in the state and myself. And I sat down at the table. I'm one of the only new people in the room. I sat down directly across from the governor, and he looked right at me, and he said, "Dr. Goldrick Rabb, I'm not your old governor." And I can't tell you how wonderful the meeting was. He really understood that there was no simple way to solve the affordability problem. He knew that freezing tuition doesn't make college affordable. And he, by the end of the meeting, tasked us. We are now a task force working on bringing forth some concrete recommendations that he can act on, you know, to move things forward in Pennsylvania. I can't tell you how good that feels.
I definitely want to get to some of the things I'm sure you guys talked about, because I'm guessing they relate to your book. But before we get to that, it sounds like what you're describing is kind of a Philadelphia version of the ideal of the Wisconsin idea, mm-hmm. that the people from the university and the government are getting together to talk about these things. Do you see the Philadelphia idea being more evolved at this point than the original here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, it is so interesting. When I first got to Madison in 2004, what I was so impressed by was I was walking up a hill, Bascom, that was featured on the cover of the textbook that I had been taught for public policy and higher education. And that's because of the Wisconsin idea. And I loved that they explicitly told me that part of the job was to be out there interacting with everyone, doing our darndest to get our hands around social problems and make a difference. I definitely felt that that shifted while I was there. I felt as though my public scholarship was a problem for the institution I worked at, that they actually viewed it as a problem. It wasn't just the government viewing it that way. I don't think Philadelphia needs to create the idea or adopt the idea. I think at this point, there's enough of us public intellectuals out there that they sort of just have to decide, do they want it or don't they? And Temple seems to really want it. It's fascinating. I didn't realize that even within the city of Philadelphia, that people talk in Philadelphia about Penn being the place that people think about doing things. And Temple's the place where we do them. Now, that's not an insult to Penn. I mean, in many ways, people have to think big thoughts and start pushing agendas, et cetera, et cetera. But I love being at a place where we create doers. And that is so refreshing and important. And they actually embrace it by making sure that we have what we need, including, by the way, the freedom and the knowledge. My dean has said, "I've got your back. You do your work, you do what you need to do, and, you know, you check those boxes, and I've got your back." That's what I always needed to hear.
Okay, so let's move on to your book, Paying the Price.
Yes.
From what I know of your book, yeah. I feel like I can sum it up in four words.
Okay.
College is too expensive.
Yes. But that's sort of the starting point. I think like a lot of the country would say that college is too expensive. And I actually don't think I needed to spend too much time proving that. Although I do try to really put some numbers around that, because I actually think that there are a lot of experts out there who are actually saying, no, the public is wrong. We don't really have a problem with the price of college. We just have a problem with people repaying their debt. You know, we have a problem with the terms of the repayment, or we have a problem with financial education, people not being able to manage their money. So I did want to kind of double down and make clear why the price was out of reach for so many. But I also, what I really try to do in the book, first of all, is explain what it means for the price to be too high and what happens when the price is too high. Because what I argue is that this new economics of college, wherein the price is high and the family finances are weak and work doesn't pay, that what this means is that people are paying the price of being in college and not getting the college education they came for. Maybe they get a degree, but they have spent so much time working and stressing out and trying to figure out how to pay their bills that they never did get to focus on the learning. They might not have even been able to engage in all those famous student activities that are so important, and the networking and things. And the other thing that I really urge people to think about by helping them see this happen to individual students is the sense that we've really let them down, especially here in Milwaukee. You know, to tell young people that an education is a pathway to good things, and to tell them they need to graduate high school, and to push them to do it, and then to lead them to college and saddle them with an exceptionally high price, that is literally a betrayal. And I don't call it a betrayal to be dramatic. I call it a betrayal because it means that you have broken their trust. And when they don't believe you anymore, you have a problem. It's not clear to me what we think we're going to see in the future when we have told all these people a story they find out is not true. I think we're seeing some of the effects of that now, but I don't think we've borne the full brunt of it at all.
I noticed, too, that you're mentioning sort of the confusion of all of these different systems of financial aid and things like that. Can you talk a little bit about your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, a starting point that I'm sure your listeners are familiar with is the mess that is the FAFSA, which is a small American bureaucratic tragedy all its own. I mean, this thing is a disaster. But what I want you to see and what I try to lay out is that it's just the tip of the iceberg. That in fact, we have an entire quote-unquote system that's not much of a system at all, that contains a ton of counterproductive rules and regulations that keep the aid professionals from being able to do their jobs in serving students. And the people who have the least resources, for whom financial aid is supposed to work the best, they encounter what one of my colleagues, Will Simpkins at CUNY, has called double bureaucracies. Meaning, I have to navigate the financial aid bureaucracy in order to be in college. But because you didn't give me enough money, I also have to navigate the bureaucracy to get food stamps. And I have to navigate the bureaucracy with regard to subsidized housing. And I have to navigate the health bureaucracies, right, to get medical care. And guess what? They don't work together.
Who's helping these kids navigate these things, or is there anybody doing that right now?
No, I think one of the problems is that so many folks don't realize that this has to be navigated, that they haven't even figured out they need to provide the navigators. And then when they do figure it out, or if we point it out, too many institutions say, sorry, not our job. That poverty thing, that's an outside school thing. Which is the same thing that's said in K-12 education. Or they say, gosh, I'd love to help. Do you know that we have no money? Which they're right about, right? So the quandary that's facing our public institutions, especially here in the city of Milwaukee, is both a combination of knowing what to do and being trained and ready to do it. And that's a challenge. They still are working on that. But also genuinely not having the resources to do the work. So this state is shuttling some of the most economically vulnerable people, if they're lucky enough to go to college, into the system with the highest prices in the state and the least availability of supports to help them through. And then they have the nerve to blame the students for not finishing college. This is not a matter of personal responsibility of these students. I have been working on this for so long, interviewing all kinds of students. I have met very few kind of messes who just can't keep their stuff together. They don't have the know-how. They don't think it's worth it. They don't, you know, people for whom some personal responsibility training would make the difference. So it was illuminating to kind of take the rhetoric out there, and rhetoric that was everywhere in every talk and paper and radio show and everything, right? And test it against the data. Mm-hmm. The rhetoric just doesn't match up.
Former UW professor Sarah Goldrick-Robb now is at Temple University in their College of Education in Philadelphia. She spoke with Lake Effect's Rachel Morello.